takes us to petitions. Number 9 is sage grouse endangered species listing. So, John, should I turn it to you, Kotelnik, and then you can lead us through this, or how would you like to do it?
Mr. Chair, yeah. So, I mean, we have about 20 minutes before the public hearing portion of it, and so speaking with Ms. Hilding and the other petitioners, that was the agreed-upon time, was 20 minutes to allow for them to give their petition. So I think that would fit right within our time frame. The one thing that I would just remind everyone who wasn't part of the original meeting when it started, if you plan to testify at the public hearing or the open forum, please email Rachel Comes, rachel.comes@state.sd.us, your name, city and state, and what you are wanting to talk about at the public forum or the public hearing or open forum. So, yeah, with that, I guess we can certainly take up Nancy's petitions if she's ready.
This is Nancy. We want to reverse the order a little bit. We want to put the leg chub first, which is the fastest at 3 minutes, and then put Eric next, which may be the longest, and then bring it up with the beaver trapping, which is possibly shorter than Eric's. But we want to be sure to give Eric all of the time that he needs. And I'm going to do the leg chub. Eric Mogar is going to do the sage grouse. And Nancy Hilding and Christy Sandwich are going to do the beaver. And we're going to switch off about slide 15 where Nancy stops talking and Christy starts talking. So will somebody please time me at 3 minutes? Okay, so please start timing it. I'm going to try to follow along. Okay, this is Nancy Hilding. I'm president of Prairie Hills Audubon Society, and this is the petition to list the lake chub as endangered. I'm trying, okay, this map is the lake chub distribution in North America from 1980. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, Natural Heritage Database map. The little yellow things are where it's critically imperiled. The red ones are where it's critically imperiled. The green ones is where it's doing well. And the blue ones is where it's possibly extirpated. And the purple ones are where they don't have data. Next slide. Next slide, please. This is going to take longer because it's slow. Okay, so, all right, so here is a report done for the Forest Service that says that if you read the red text there, the lake chub was once all through the Black Hills. It was at this point, which was written in 2006, it was disappearing in Deerfield Lake, although it was in Deerfield Lake. Next slide, please. Okay, so here's a map of from 2003 from the Forest Service Technical Report. The dots that are blue and orange are from the 19th century, the 1800s. The yellow dots are from 1920 to 1990, and the pink dots are from 1990 to 2000, and you see some in Wyoming and just on the border there. Okay, next slide, please. So this is the South Dakota Wildlife Action Plan 2014. Pictures of the lake chub. All the little red dots are historic dots. There's no green dots, which would be current dots. Next slide, please. Okay, here is the from the Forest Service Monitoring Report 2014. 2013 to 2014, you see it disappearing from Deerfield Lake with it starting to go badly in 1999, gone as of 2007. Next slide, please. Okay, so this is an email from Game Fish and Parks explaining that they found the lake chub up in Custer Gallatin National Forest in 2016, but didn't find it again. 2017 drought year, and that they found it in 2019 in Box Elder Creek in Black Hills. Next slide, please. Okay, here's an email from the Custer Gallatin
National Park. Nancy, 3 minutes before you know.
What? I'm at 3 minutes? Okay, yep. Custer Gallatin National Forest retracted the Lake Chep sighting. Sorry, mistake, wrong fish. Next slide, please. Okay, this is a confirming finding at 2 years in Box Elder. Next slide. This is the Wildlife Action Plan's conservation challenges, and I think that's the end. You can stare at that. This is the literature cited. Go back and let them stare at the study, the challenges. Okay, this is, we think it should be listed as endangered. It used to be in many streams in the Black Hills. Now it's only in one stream in the Black Hills. Thank you. Okay, so now it's Eric's turn. If we're going to get through 20 minutes, we got to rush from one person to the next person. Eric's next.
Okay, just to be clear, Nancy, I'm stopping your time while you get stuff loaded, so,
You're stopping this, but we still have to do it before the public forum.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and members of the commission, my name is Eric Molvar. I'm a wildlife biologist and executive director of Western Watersheds Project, and I'm going to be presenting the petition to list the greater sage grouse under the South Dakota Endangered Species Law. This petition is being brought by both Western Watersheds Project and Prairie Hills Audubon Society. Next slide, please. There we go. What I want you to see here is that what we have in South Dakota is a long-term decline. Sage grouse are naturally cyclical in their populations. They go up to peaks, and then they go down to troughs, and they go up to peaks, and they go down to troughs. What we see over time is that the peaks are getting lower over time, the troughs are getting lower over time, and as the troughs hit zero for individual lek populations, those lek populations are going to be winking out. So this is a bird that's in bad shape. Right now, in 2020, there were 158 strutting males counted. If you correct for the number of males that are sighted and the number of females that are out there that are harder to count, you get a total population of 632 birds out of that. That population presently is well below the 5,000 bird minimum viable population that is there based on the best available science. And indeed, there is real concern about the population viability based on the population viability analysis of Garten and others in 2015, who found that there was a 72.5% probability that the overall population in the Dakotas would decline below 50 strutting males within 100 years. So it's on a bad trajectory. Go ahead to the next slide. Here you can see in the far upper right corner that Dakota subpopulation that Garten was talking about. It covers northwestern South Dakota and a little corner of North Dakota and a little edge of Montana, and that's the subpopulation that we're concerned about here with the South Dakota listing petition. Next slide, please. Here you see the core area mapping by the South Dakota Game, Fish, and Parks showing where the sightings are for the greater sage grouse. The little yellow dots are the lek sites where the sage grouse gather to breed and mate. Next slide, please. Here you see on the left a map of the sagebrush habitat in green and a look at the core area / sage grouse priority habitat management areas from the BLM federal plans in South Dakota. So it's a relatively small, disjointed area. It's relatively fragmented in terms of its ownership. Next slide, please. Here you see that the about three-quarters of the remaining sage grouse range in South Dakota is on private surface. The remainder is about evenly split between federal and state surface. And so you're going to be looking at a conservation puzzle that includes private land, federal land, and state land in those different jurisdictions. Next slide, please. Here are some of the challenges that sage grouse face. I would say out of these, the biggest ones are livestock grazing that reduces the grass height below 10.2 inches. That is the threshold that sage grouse need for optimal nest success based on studies by Kaxer et al. And also by Herman Brunson et al. In the Dakotas. It's notable that in this area, the sage grouse are in a habitat that has sparser sagebrush and silver sagebrush that doesn't provide as much cover as they have in Wyoming with the big sagebrush species that we have there and the thicker sagebrush. So these are the studies that are kind of the controlling scientific studies. You might hear at some point that there are competing studies that say that the nest success is no longer affected by grass height. That is not the case. The nearest study that looked at grass height effects on nest success was Doherty et al. In 2014 in northeastern Wyoming. And the studies that are attempting to discredit the importance of nest height, they confirmed that Doherty et al. 2014 remained significant in terms of the impact of grass height on nest success. So for South Dakota, there's nothing to indicate that grass height no longer is an important factor. It still is, and therefore grazing is an important factor. Another important factor to look at is barbed wire fences, because low-flying grouse collide with those fences and get killed, especially on flat ground. So those are two major concerns out of these. Next slide, please. The other issue that's important in South Dakota to consider is West Nile virus and stock tanks and water facilities for livestock are the breeding grounds for the Culex tarsalis mosquito that causes West Nile virus. So these are the sage grouse is a species that faces a number of threats. It's at a very low population threshold. And currently, South Dakota lacks the kind of state sage grouse plan that Wyoming has that applies things like lick buffers and disturbance caps and limits on where you can where and how much facilities you can build near sage grouse habitats. That would be a real smart thing for South Dakota to enact, is to try and get one of those sage grouse plans that includes measurable, enforceable standards that protect the sage grouse habitats in place. It's also worth noting that recovering the greater sage grouse is in the state's best interest, both from the standpoint of increasing hunting opportunities, but also from the standpoint of endangered species listing at the federal level. And if you want to avoid a federal Endangered Species Act listing for the greater sage grouse, which is a distinct possibility, then the best thing that you can do is put in place adequate regulatory mechanisms the Fish and Wildlife Service can look at and say, yeah, we've got the sage grouse covered, and yes, we have the populations in an upward trajectory toward recovery, so we don't need to worry about listing them on the federal level. That would be a smart thing for the Game and Fish and Parks Commission to do. So with that, I will conclude, and if there are any questions, I suppose there's probably an opportunity at the end for me to address those.
Sure, we'll have plenty of opportunity to visit and ask questions. Are you and Nancy now completed then, or do you have...
No, Nancy, this is Nancy erupting. We now need to do the beaver petition rule change, which is going to be done by two people. This is Nancy Hilding speaking first and Christy Sandwich speaking second. Christy will come on around slide 15. Okay?
Right.
So will somebody please time us? What do we have? We've got 10 minutes left. Would somebody please time us and let us know? Like 9 minutes, when we're getting to 9 minutes, okay? All right, so this petition is presented by Prairie Hills Audubon, Nancy Hilding, Christy Sandwich, and it's to change the beaver rules in South Dakota. Please, the next slide. Okay, so the next slide, please. Okay, so this is summary real quick. Currently, the rule says beaver trapping hunting is 12 months West River, 6 months East River, and the Black Hills National Forest is 3 months, and in the Black Hills Fire Protection District, it's either on private, not Forest Service land, it's either 6 or 12 months, depending where you are. Next slide, please. Okay, so this is the rule, current rule. After John Klitzolnik rewrote it. So here is the red stuff is everything that's used to describe how they have divided the Black Hills Fire Protection District up into three crazy zones. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so here you have the crazy division. Within that pink square, the Forest Service property is 3 months, and the not Forest Service property is 6 months trapping season, hunting. Okay, so outside of that, within the Fire Protection District, Black Hills National Forest, 3 months. Other properties, 12 months. And then all of West River outside of the Fire Protection District is 12 months. Next slide, please. Okay, so this is our proposed rule. It makes it a lot simpler. And we have a statewide 5 month beaver trapping season that ends on March 31st, and this is to address the otter having babies, which we'll get into later. Okay, and a 3 month season on Forest Service property. Next slide. Okay, so this is a Game Fish and Parks quote on endangered species status review. It explains that the otters have a compensable relationship with beavers, as beaver dams provide year-round open water and beaver bank dens and lodges are used by the river otters as rest and natal sites. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Okay, this is Melquist. He did a 4-year study for Game Fish and Parks. He's an otter expert, ending 2015. This is his recommendation section. I do not believe current regulations for harvesting and controlling beaver populations in South Dakota are conducive to the expansion of otters in West River and hinder the rate of growth East River. He points out otters start having babies April 1st and says, to reduce the possibility of trapping female otters with dependent young, beaver trapping seasons should not extend beyond the 31st of March. Okay, next, skip the next slide. Go over to two slides. Skip. Okay. Did we skip one? Let's see, where are we? That's the next one. Okay, this is Melquist on features to look for when you're trying to figure out what's a good stream. In his watershed features, he identifies beaver activity. Next slide, please. Okay, here is this big issue with taking of otters via trapping incidentally. Here is, there are 73% of the dead otters over 37 years were taken and trapped. And here's a different one. For all of these are Game Fish and Parks statistics. Here's it showing out of 216 dead otters over 40 years, 53.7% killed in beaver traps, 32.4% in unknown traps, and the rest are other animals. So we have a significant take of beavers in South Dakota by otters are taken in beaver traps. Next one, please. Okay, so the reason for the alleged reason for the 365-day trapping season West River is because of conflict beavers. And here's a statute that allows anybody in South Dakota to ask the Secretary of Game, Fish, and Parks to kill a conflict beaver. We do not need 365-day trapping season to get rid of conflict beavers. Okay, next one, all right? Okay, this is just pointing out the beavers have their babies on starting May 1st. That's why the beaver season ends on the end of April. But the otters have their babies starting April 1st. So if you don't want to incidentally take otters with babies when you're beaver trapping, you don't have a season in April, which is Melquist's recommendation. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, this is where we switch over to Christy. You have 4 minutes, Christy. Oh, I talked too long. Sorry.
Hi, this is this is Christy Zanzik. I'm just going to pick up where Nancy left off. And I'm a biologist and naturalist, and I've got a bachelor's and master's in environmental science. So I wanted to talk a little bit about how beavers are a keystone species. So that means that the entire ecosystems that are around them depend on them. So if you take the beavers away, then you lose other species. And this is similar to, like, we didn't have wolves in Yellowstone. They reintroduced them, and they found that everything changed. The shapes of the streams changed. And it's really easy to see how beavers create habitats, because they build those beaver dams, and then it creates a habitat for aquatic and terrestrial species. These species can include fish, turtles, frogs, otters, and waterfowl, as well as a number of other birds. And Nancy had said before that river otters are included in that. They do build their homes in beaver dens that have been left behind. And they also, the beaver dams also provide for unique fish habitat. So different species can actually live in the areas that are created by beaver dams. And those beaver dams do change the landscapes, as well as relocate surface waters. And that changing landscape, again, provides for habitat. It reduces erosion and allows for a really diverse ecosystem. The dams create settling ponds, which reduce sediment loading and pollution and sediment pollution. Because these areas, the beavers build the dam, and it flows the water. So the same way that you would put catchment ponds to reduce erosion, beaver dams do that naturally. And in fact, in areas where they are losing beavers, the beavers are removed or they're trapped out, they actually end up having to install beaver dams. So they build their human-made beaver dams to replace the benefits that those dams had provided. Beavers are a management indicator species in the Black Hills National Forest, including in the latest revision of the plan in 2006. And they, as a result of that, they should have an annual management plan. But the last monitoring was done in 2014 and published in 2015. Beavers are kind of a canary in the coal mine because removing beavers can affect so many other species and have a domino effect. But right now we're treating them more like a pest than like a keystone species. And so we're just really encouraging you guys to reduce the length of this season so that we can allow beavers to come back in the Black Hills so that and recover a little bit more so that it can allow for a reintroduction project for river otters. Nancy, did you have anything else to add?
Well, you might just real quickly go to the next four slides, but they need to
stay
time.
Okay, so if you go to the next slide, you can see some of the ways that that beavers can change habitats, and it just kind of shows how a series of river beaver dams can affect a whole landscape. And create for more smaller meandering streams, as opposed to one faster moving, more rapid stream.
All right, thank you, Christine. That concludes your guys' time. But I know, Mr. Chair, that it's time for the public hearing, and maybe if the petitioners wanted to stay on the line after the public hearing and open the forum, if the commission had questions, they could address them at that point.
Yeah, that's a good idea, because there will be questions, I'm sure.